What is going on, everyone? It's Justin here, and today I'm here to welcome you to the first episode of the podcast. I couldn't come up with a better name with it, so we called it Feature, which is the name of my media company. And in this podcast, we're going to talk about a lot of things. I think when I was first asked about what I would like to talk about, I just want to talk about things I like, whether it's business, lifestyle, travel, fashion, sports, tech. I know it's very broad, and we are going to narrow down and also have guests on certain episodes that can talk more about each topic. I like to ramble. If you guys can tell in my videos, even though it is only like 15 to 20 minutes, I could talk for hours a lot of times. I'm sure you've seen that, and especially about things I enjoy. So I feel like the podcast is like the perfect platform to kind of complement the YouTube for you guys to learn more about myself, and for me to also give like tips and talk about some stories on like trips and just, I mean, anything, pretty free flowing. I know that's not like the best way to always do it, but so I make YouTube videos. My main channel has over 500,000 subscribers. I've been making videos for like a decade now. So if you guys want to find me there, as well as all of our links, make sure you check them down below. And if you guys want to see some more highlights and future episodes of the podcast, we're also joined by a co-host, my friend Brandon, who has been in many industries, a lot of which that I personally like as well, including selling phones at Best Buy. As you guys know, I review a lot of mobile devices, and he switched over to real estate, podcasting, and we're using all of his equipment because we're still waiting for mine to arrive from Australia.
I was in the fashion field for a little while. Back in 2015, I wanted to win this account called Outfit Grid, where you laid out your fashion on the ground and then you took a picture of it. And if you won, you'd get reposted. So all I wanted to do was win that. Start taking photos, start taking pictures, and I eventually won, and then won again, and then won again. And I got sort of obsessed with fashion, met up a photographer, started taking photos a couple times a week. Went from 10 to 20 to 30 to 40K, started collaborating with local guys. We started mixing clothes back and forth, and then created a YouTube channel off of that. And I think at some point along that journey, and that was like the era of Hypebeast, to put it that way.
You guys made a YouTube channel and some of the influencer stuff as well. And you were also modeling with Alex at the time for Dangerfield, which is the company that I co-own now. And we still haven't found anybody else to model for the photos. So that's still your task. But we both like tech. We both like business. You're in real estate, which is an industry that I'm very interested in, even though I'm not as kind of knowledgeable in that field.
Love interior design. And on that note, as a plug, I wouldn't be a professional if I didn't say this. I am a working realtor in Victoria, BC for the last few years now. You or someone you know is looking to buy or sell real estate, head to my website at brandonfaber.ca. It's good to sit down and get this out of the way. We have filmed a few pre-intros, but this is the first one in the actual studio and seeing it all set up.
As in my mom's basement, but couldn't it came tell. Together pretty quick. I mean, I was at your house a couple months ago. I know you've had this podcast equipment for like many years now. We've seen the commercial shoots and the few sets, but I decided because we're all home right now, it may be a good time to start doing a podcast. It's something I've wanted to do for a while, but I think a lot of times when you're kind of busy with the thing that's bringing in the money, which was YouTube, it's hard to come up with like new ideas to want to spend time on. So I think this is the perfect opportunity. And so I had the idea of doing a slat wall. I've always wanted like a black slat wall like this. I think it just brings a lot of texture. I love LED lights, and these are from Nanlite. They're just hanging on some fishing wire. Hopefully it doesn't fall off mid-episode or run out of battery. And got this podcast stuff together. We have the table, the legs finally arrived, which is good. But all in all, I think what's different about this podcast project is that it's come together so quickly. Usually I take a long time to get started. My website's been in the works for like 7 years now. This is all good to go. It's essentially temporary for now until I find an actual space. We've got all their lights here, but I thought we have all the equipment to make a high quality podcast. The knowledge is here. The interest, I know a lot of the audience also loves the combination of business and fashion and travel and all that. And I feel like that's something that I just haven't been able to talk as much about on my YouTube videos within like a 15 minute span of an episode. So in this first episode, I just thought I would introduce myself, talk a bit about like the journey, how long I've been doing videos for. I know a lot of times people will subscribe throughout the years and not really see kind of how the channel evolved from before. And we're also going to be doing a few more episodes that are going to talk about specifics into the business field, how marketing kind of powers the world, the importance of having business knowledge, whether or not you should go to university, with the opinion coming from a dropout like myself, and also real estate, how the social media side has changed the world for younger generation real estate agents like yourself, and how to differentiate from people who have been in the industry for a very long time. I also really want to include some like sports talk. I love Formula One and hockey, and how marketing and business differs between different leagues. Influencer field, there's a lot to talk about. I know tech is one aspect. There's also the lifestyle, the travel, the beauty industry, and how those are interconnected in the way you monetize your platforms, build the audience, and maintain it, and also the importance of like content production. And there's just so much to talk about. As you guys can tell, I love to go on tangents. We jump around on topics all the time, but I'm going to try to keep it as effective as possible. I'm learning as we go as well in terms of this podcast stuff. Brandon has more experience. I think it'd be a good opportunity to just, I'll talk about how I started on YouTube. And Brandon was also, we met up, I think, for dinner in, was it 2016 or so? I think it was at the end of that, when my channel was coming off of its worst year. I think he's seen kind of the path of turnaround and how much I hated the videos I was making. And
for anyone that doesn't know, he's been doing this a long time. Like, this isn't just something you picked up and, you know, been doing in a few years.
Perhaps too long.
Yeah. How long has that been?
It's been about a decade. I think I started when I was 11 or 12. And I think for those who don't know, when I grew up, I wasn't really into tech. I was like, I mean, I liked Lego. I liked drawing. We're actually covering a lot of the art that I made. It's pretty bad art, but my parents kept it. So I was into drawing. I feel like I had a bit of a business mind, but I didn't notice it when I was young. And eventually I was like looking up how to buy an iPod or like what information there was about it online, apps and like accessories. And I would see people were getting free stuff. And as an 11-year-old, you're like, how do people get these free things? Like, these are $20 cases that I got to save up for. So as soon as I got my iPod, I started emailing a ton of companies. Nobody would send me anything. And it just went from there. I made like 300 videos on the iPod of like random stuff around the house. I think I reviewed like HDMI cables, printers, anything I could find. It was just like for the love of it. And eventually it evolved into the business, and there definitely was some growing pains. I think the reason why 2016 was such a bad year was because of the transition into sponsorships and like building the business side of it. And I must have gone too fast and not in the right way, where the growth in the audience was severely affected. And
what was your first viral video? Like, you started producing videos through your iPod. What was the one that really set you in motion?
I think what's different about when I started YouTube, like 2011, 2012, it felt like 100,000 views was viral. Back then, the platform was so much smaller, and anybody with like 20 to 50,000 subscribers was like considered huge. My first real viral video that I think made all of the years before like worth it was the Samsung Galaxy versus the iPhone. I think it got like 3.4 million views, but I had a 60-40 split with a network, because when I was young, I thought it'd be cool to be signed with a network. What a network really means is you're giving away more, like almost half of your money for almost nothing, especially at that channel size.
Well, what did they promise to provide?
I mean, they'll say like, oh, you're like part of the network. You can say you're part of it, stuff like that. Nothing really. But as a kid, I signed it. And so 3.4 million views, 40% of the money was automatically taken by the network. So those are all like things that I learned along the way, business mistakes that I might've made and hopefully learned from, and even ones that I might be making right now. Maybe this whole podcast is a mistake, the investment into the equipment and the time and everything. This is like a weekend project, but I think it's fun. It's nice to enter new industries that are ones that you do just for fun. I mean, we're not making any money off this podcast, at least right now. But hopefully it'll grow into something. And it's the same way that, when I started YouTube in 2010, I didn't really think I'd ever be able to turn it into a career or a living, be able to hire full-time staff. That was like completely out of the realm. And to be fair, the industry back then was not mature enough to really prove that it could be a sustainable form of income. So it's cool to just start things for the love of it and, eventually make it into your full-time thing. I think there's just so much out there in terms of opportunities nowadays. It's obviously a very saturated space, both in fashion and in tech, but with that comes opportunities, and it's just a matter of finding ways to get those opportunities. But going back to like the YouTube start thing, yeah, it's been a decade. And I would say when you look at the YouTube channel now, it's at 500,000 subscribers, and it's no secret that I haven't grown as fast as other people. But at the same time, there's a lot of creators that started back when I did who weren't able to continue. So I think the way I look at the YouTube right now is, I'm lucky to be able to do what has been able to be done. Been able to enjoy a lot of things from it. Obviously check out a lot of great products, travel the world for free and even be paid for it. I don't know if it's a good comparison, but it's almost like an athlete that's like played an entire career and has had a pretty solid career and has stayed in the league, but has not won a Stanley Cup. But at the end of that, you still feel like satisfied and no regrets kind of thing. And I feel like if YouTube was to end today, I'm pretty happy with where it's gone. But at the same time, the ultimate goal is still to at least just cross a million subscribers. And from then just continue to create stuff I enjoy. I'm sure like, yeah, YouTube side, you've been on the side of that as well with the FitzFlow and kind of like the team aspect of it and seeing the growth of it. Love to hear some of your insight as well.
Well, even before that, like you explained a lot there. When we did Meet for Dinner, when your channel was getting lower views than normal,
I was losing subs every video.
Yeah. So what did you do to turn things around? It felt like a year of just serious momentum, man. Everything was stacking up. Like what were some of those key figs? Just a couple of examples.
It's almost like a moment of realization. I think like a lot of times when you go on a certain path and you're like so focused on a way that you want to do things, even if it's the wrong one, you hit a point where you're, I don't know, I think it was like right around December where there's just like a realization where if you look back at the last 11 months, it was pretty clear and honest to myself that everything was done wrong.
What did you identify was being done wrong?
The sponsorships were just too many. They weren't ones that were like strategic for the channel. They just didn't work and they're like dedicated videos. And I just wasn't creating content that people would want to see, that I would want to watch and stuff that would grow the channel long term. So essentially I was pulling a short-term gain within that 1 year as opposed to growing long-term sustainability and hopefully making it a longer-term career. I think the biggest realization after that year was that if I continue to do things the way they were, by the time I finished university, I'd be going into a corporate job because my YouTube channel would be so dead that it would be at a point of no return. So it was a matter of changing up the way we did things completely. We didn't do sponsorships for 6 months into 2017. It was just one video a week. We'd plan it very specifically, figure out some ways to add personality, make it a bit funny, sit mm-hmm. in front of the camera for the first time in 3 or 4 years. I used to never sit in front of the camera. And even now I probably shouldn't. I'm sure my haircut looks really funny from the side. This headphone is like the same size as my head. But Brandon told me I should wear it. Wearing this Tommy hoodie all the time.
Dude, you're so honest with yourself. That's what's so hilarious about you on social media.
I purposely wore this for the first episode. The funny thing is I've been wearing that Dangerfield hoodie in just as many videos. And for those who don't know, I'm a co-owner of Dangerfield. Mm-hmm. We make like bomber jackets, overcoats, but the hoodies are like my bread and butter. I love hoodies. Yeah. And when you're wearing a black hoodie, nobody complains about the fact that you've worn it for more than one video. But if you wear one that has like a big Tommy logo on the front like this, everybody notices.
Yeah, they're like, rotate that out there, man. Come on now. What's, so you were going on about like what you were doing wrong. Like what did you were starting on what you were starting to do right, which was no sponsorships for 6 months. What else did you do to sort of add a personality flair? And then when did you see the views start to stack up?
I think it was just like approaching each video more carefully. Before it was like I'd be making a video to make a video. And I think the way that I look at it, I think Dave TD, I used to talk to quite a bit when he was on his rise. Obviously, he's killing it right now. But I think what he told me was to look at your channel as a stock. It's worth a certain amount. In evaluation, you have stock price and like the equity. And each time you did a brand deal that was maybe not as beneficial to the channel or would affect your audience, it would be essentially like selling a stock. You'd be cashing in on it. Whereas if you play the long game, you can grow the overall equity. And in the future, if you decide to sell a couple stocks here and there, you're going to be able to make much more out of it as opposed to stopping the growth of your overall brand. And I think the beauty of YouTube is whether your videos make any money or not, if there's a video that gets a lot of views or it just looks good on your channel, it's like a portfolio piece, kind of like the Porsche Taycan video, which thankfully did decently. It's building the overall equity. It's always going to be on YouTube. People are always going to be able to find it. When you're working with a new client, that makes a lot of sense. You can send them that as an example of what you're able to create. So I think the good thing about having a certain number of subscribers and a good level of income on a regular year right now is that it gives us the flexibility to try things that won't necessarily earn money, but they keep me excited as a creator and also build the overall like long-term as a brand. A lot of times it's just easy to get stuck on doing a certain type of videos over and over again. And because they work, you don't really go outside of your area of comfort. So I think what we've really been trying to do with like the home videos and the setup makeover, which has now become a pretty profitable series, and also the Porsche Taycan video, is just to show where the best of our abilities from a production side is in hopes of like being able to leverage it long term of content that we can produce, whether it's in the car industry or outside of that. And I know with like with Instagram as well, that's like one of those things where I think you were mentioning to me at that dinner that the personal brand is the most important thing. You could post a great photo, or you could even post a product photo of sitting at a restaurant and there's like the candle. I remember I've mentioned the story to you many times, but you were telling me that once your audience is at a point where it's very loyal and they follow the person for who they are and what they do.
When you put yourself out there, like this is the thing that's cool about you, man, is you're very honest with yourself and open about yourself. And I think that's what has helped shape a lot of your resurgence now is your honesty. And that's the type of content. And you talk about like a top tier actor, like who was the guy that was just came out with a movie, Hemsworth. Let's say he took a picture of a candle. You think that's going to get 1,000 likes? Like, no, man, it's Liam. He just adds a little caption about how the candle is inspiring to him. And that's that, because people,
what like it means to their lifestyle.
Exactly. Yeah.
And obviously I'm not trying to compare myself to that in any way. If anything, I don't love the whole like social media attention kind of thing, but I think what I've seen lately with like integration of lifestyle videos and more personalized videos, especially in an industry where it's like tech, a lot of times you're just reviewing stuff. People are scrolling through videos just to learn about it and whether to buy it or not. And they don't really care who's in front of the camera or what they do. They just want to learn about the product. I think what I've really tried to do to push a long-term sustainability, is to integrate more lifestyle in a very casual way. I think I just like to be brutally honest with like the funny stuff. I think at the end of the day, I was just like some regular kid who always had bad grades and kind of stumbled upon YouTube by accident and was able to kind of grow, learn a lot of things and build a career out of it. And I think the only thing that I might've done differently compared to, I think the only thing that that I could say that I did right throughout all these years was just continue to make it. Even when the channel wasn't doing well, I was still making videos. Even when I wasn't feeling great about things, I would just continue to push forward with it, because you never know when the turning point is. First 3 years, I was watching my own videos essentially because they weren't very good. I don't really blame anybody for not watching them. But 2014, I think, is like, I would have never predicted that 2014 would have been the year that the videos would all of a sudden, like from the Samsung Galaxy investment, emptying my bank account to buy one phone and betting on that would be the kind of the surge to the channel hitting 100,000 subscribers. So I think, yeah, with anything, if you can continue to stick with it and just find that turning point. Obviously, I don't really believe in doing things the same way if they're not working. You got to find ways to adapt. But as long as you find ways to adapt, be creative, and kind of stick to your own strategy and your own personality, at some point there will hopefully be a turning point. And I think the channel has gone through like multiple phases and examples of that. Even last year, there was a bit where the views were down and there's pressure to increase them. Yeah, it's like being willing to change. It's tough sometimes when you've been doing things the same way for so many years and you're used to like the old system, the way the algorithm used to work. You kind of need like an eye opener a lot of times.
Well, were you doing all that yourself? Like,
yeah, everything.
When did you bring someone on to help delegate a lot of the work?
So when I dropped out, that was when I brought in the first full time.
You drop out?
Around May of 2018. So about 2 years from now, or about 2 years ago, as of sometime, I think next week, I brought on the first full time. And I mean, that helps like when it comes to filming and maybe a little bit of editing. I feel like I was still very much like a control freak. I tried to step on too much of the process. Another turning point would be December, bringing on my agent to manage brand deals. I think when you look at the business, you have to evaluate it from a point where you have to find what areas you can do yourself and which areas anybody could do if they were trained properly. Obviously, sitting in front of the camera for videos is something that I can't really replace. If I really wanted to, you could just turn it into like a brand channel, but if your name's on it, you kind of have to be on camera. when it comes to emails, I feel like a manager could do that. And same with like strategy, thumbnails, titles and stuff like that. So those are things that I ended up delegating. I think a video editor would be nice to have in the future, because right now it's just, I want to focus on making the videos better, spending more time on them. But each person has 24 hours. And when one person is splitting up their 24 hours into areas that they have to work on, Dangerfield, last week it was like Zoom classes for university, which I'm still trying to decide if I want to drop. It was just like, it was just one of those things where I ran out of time in the day. I would edit till midnight. I would get my 7-8 hours of sleep. But at the end of the day, you're planning your video, you're filming it, you're editing it, you're doing the business side, you're doing the optimization side, you're uploading your last video. The quality is just not going to be good enough if you have to do that every single day of the week. So bringing on like an editor, for example, would be a great example of,
what's your team look like now? Like, where are things being delegated? Like, how do you run and how quickly can you put out a video if a product drops today? Yeah. No notice, you have the product in your hands.
So right now it's one full time, Trevor, okay, who was in my university class, and he ended up coming to work for me. And other than that, the team has Gio, who is the graphic designer in Italy, and he's in a obviously different time zone. So a lot of times I'll send him a thumbnail at midnight, and by the morning I'll be able to wake up to a nice, pretty thumbnail, hopefully.
Sounds like something that most creators would want to do.
Yeah. But at the same time, the business side is another area where you just can't get off your mind. You still see like all the communications and you want to make sure it's going good. So we have an agency that manages that, still trying to decide if it's a good fit or not. But recently we also brought on a optimization specialist for like SEO, thumbnail strategy, title strategy, looking at the data of like click-through rate. I think a lot of people don't realize that YouTube is like a very complicated mathematical system with like numbers, code, algorithm variables. There's like, I heard there could be like thousands of variables that can contribute to whether or not a video performs. And obviously a good video is a good video, but there's still so many variables and many of which that you can control and adapt to. And it's very easy to complain about the algorithm. I've been someone who used to not complain about it, but in the past year or so, I've definitely had my fair share of like saying the algorithm was against us or it doesn't fit our style. And I felt like the videos were decent, but they just weren't doing as well as before. But I think especially recently I've learned that the algorithm performs in certain ways that whether you like it or not, if you're able to adapt to it, it could be used to your advantage.
Okay. You know what I was thinking when you were saying that was, what, just from your example, what do you think a top producer like Logan Paul, let's say, for example, who would be on his team knowing what you know?
I would say assistants to be able to, because in their case, they're vlogging. It's a very different space from us. We're in like a product field that we review stuff. But in their case, it's like... they have an assistant. They might have like a producer. They also obviously have like merch managers. They have a business manager. I know for the most part, those guys, even though they have a business mind, and I have heard they have a great business mind, the boxing thing makes so much money, maybe even as much money as the professional fights. Pay-per-view numbers were insane, but I'm sure they have a business team as well. And legal team. I don't know if they have like a editor. I believe they do have editors and videographers, but
Someone like David Dobrik produce a content every day, the same kind of quality?
I mean, you got to have a great creative mind. And I think a lot of times people might watch his videos and it's really hard to entertain people through 600 episodes, I believe. They're all funny. They all do amazing views. And even though the algorithm on the tech side has revealed that videos of 15 minutes and longer do better just because of watch time, it's crazy that at 4 minutes he's able to... like, I bet his watch time must be like over 90%. I feel like I've watched all of his videos like start to finish, because everybody has 4 minutes in a day. If you're taking a dump or whatever, you can watch his video. And it's funny. So I think he's great at coming up with ideas, of course. I think he does edit his own videos. He films his own videos. And he has like the good group of friends that are able to have content and these like ongoing themes. Funny story was he was at Playlist Live in Orlando, a YouTube event that I was speaking at. I saw him everywhere and I've heard of his name before. I've seen him on Casey Neistat's vlog, but I didn't really know who he was. I never watched the videos. And we'd see him at the party and stuff, doing some like funny pranks and stuff. So after I went home, I watched like 14 hours of YouTube in like 2 days. And I had watched every single one of his vlogs up until I think his 420th. And from then I was hooked. Like I was watching every single one after that. They're all funny. And it's just something to look forward to each day. I think with Casey Neistat, what he's done before that was very special was he was able to excite you every single morning. He would upload it right around like morning Eastern time. And I have no idea how he was able to edit like that every day, but you'd wake up and you'd have a new vlog to watch. And every day, you know, you would have the vlog to watch.
Do you think there's an importance to that kind of consistency on social media now?
Yes and no. I think there has been scrutiny on the YouTube system for pressuring creators to have to create content so constantly to be able to keep up. And I think it is true that if you don't make videos for like a couple weeks or even a month, a lot of times you feel like you're like left behind or you can't do that. There are creators like Shane Dawson who can make one video every 6 months and it's going to do well. There's like that level of hype for it. But generally speaking, I think there is a frequency bias to the YouTube algorithm. But at the same time, it is also important to find the medium between how much time you should spend on making a video better versus making more videos in general. Because like if my channel, for example, if I make 5 bad videos, they each get 15,000 views. How many views is that? It's like, I don't know how to do the math, but I think it's like 75,000. Whereas if I spend like a month making a great video and it does like 400,000 or 500,000 views, you break that down, the amount of time you spent making 4 videos versus a couple very good ones I perform, it makes sense to just make the better ones. So I think it's about finding that medium depending on your industry. And for example, right now, the turnaround time for like a very quick news video of like a new product coming out, we can get that done in maybe about 30 minutes to film and an hour to edit. And that might get more views in a video I spent like 2 weeks on. So it's hard to say. And I think the entertainment industry, Logan Paul, Casey Neistat, and vloggers is very different from like the product-based and influencer industry. And I think tech alone also has its own practices and mediums. And I've personally been trying to research each space and pull things together and figure out what the best way to do things is. I think what Casey Neistat did is something that not very many people were able to do, to be able to film like that every day. And I think New York's a perfect setting for that. It was almost like a movie in the city every day.
Right. Well, New York's New York. Like, what are you doing now? Like, who are you paying attention to that you'd say is killing it? And then what are you taking from that?
I think in the tech space, obviously MKBHD, he's killing it. I think the personality aspect of his videos, anything that he says, people can trust. He's very good at synthesizing information. What I feel like there is a bit of a void in the tech space, though, is like these like cinematic travel and lifestyle videos, day in life and showing more of the behind the scenes. Because I think people in tech love their tech and that's what they really focus on. And that's great. I think there's people who provide much better and more detailed information than I would, whereas I go more like the consumer approach, like what Best Buy would tell you after trying out all these things. And but I think I also love watching like travel creators. I think Sam Colder is an amazing example. I think those videos, just the B-roll just captivates you. It gets me excited. And a lot of times people will say like, oh, as a tech YouTuber, you don't need to spend this much money on equipment. You can film it on an iPhone. You can film it on a camera that costs as much as the memory card that's in that thing right now. What I would say is, after being in the industry so long, you can get bored of things quickly. And the whole like being able to try out new equipment, push the boundaries of quality, hopefully, and content, which is something I'm trying to work on, is important to keep you excited.
Well, you're not just an informant. You're still a creative at the baseline. Like, you still like to put out videos. You still like to create
picky
videos.
Picky about the way things look.
Exactly. Maybe there's a flair to it. And it's not that you're getting bored. It's just that you got to be able to push your creativity. And I totally get that. Do you see like there's almost like a molding now of like when Sam Colder came up? I remember he was huge, man, because no one had ever seen that sort of cinematography done. Do you think a lot of people pulled his sort of cinematography and started integrating it into fields like tech space?
I haven't seen too much in the tech space, but I think in terms of like videography, Sam Colder is like the benchmark for that space. He's done an amazing job. And I think what a lot of people don't know is how young he is. I believe he's only a couple years older than me. I think he's younger than you.
People don't know how young you are. You are?
23, actually. No, I turned 23.
Doesn't
was it
even
Friday?
Know his birthday.
Something like that. I don't know. I don't care. I don't give a fuck about a birthday. I think birthdays are so stupid.
Did you just say your birthday is on Friday?
Last Friday. But I forgot about it. But
this is the kind of guy he is. Just works so
any
much.
Any day could be your birthday, you know? If you want it to be, then
No,
good. I'll eat cake any day of the week. Yeah, but yeah. I think as you get older, then like once you reach like 21 is a good birthday. Then after that, it's like each year, the standards and expectation that society has for you, and especially in the business world, goes up one bit, and everything that you did that you thought you were doing great for your age ends up going out the window, or the threshold kind of gets pushed a little bit, which I guess is good and bad. But yeah, going back to the Sam Kolder thing, I think what he's done specifically well that a lot of travel creators, including myself, are terrible at is putting together a story, telling a story through visuals. You don't always have to have a voiceover or anything, but in my case, you can film a similar level of quality B-roll and just throw all those clips together, and the watch time is low because it's just a bunch of B-roll stacked one after another. I'd like you to talk about a bit like the personality side. I think what you guys did with Flitz Flow was just a couple guys who loved what they did or love fashion, and were just having like casual conversations about putting together fits, and like the content side and like setting up the cameras and everything was more of like a means to just broadcast it to people. But you guys focus a lot on like content and personality, and that's something that I'm still trying to work on. So I'd like if you like talk about kind of how you, what your approach to that is, and how to integrate that in social media.
Well, to more generalize it rather than like a narrow focus, I'll sort of broaden it, is we had an awful setup. I mean, we used like a really basic Canon 60 and we didn't even have a mic, but it was just us getting together and having fun. That was what people liked to see. Yeah. And that is, there's a combination of what Gary Vee talks about, which is just putting content out there and just do.
Yeah.
But there's also, you want to have like gradual improvement for your channel as well.
For sure.
Like, and that's what you've done. And, you know, we've kind of both did the same thing. Maybe if you feel you're lacking in the personality aspect, you actually haven't. You've stepped it up, and that's why your channel resurged.
I just hate like trying too hard to show personality. I just want to just be blunt and make fun of your own flaws. Yeah,
people get nervous, man. It's like, it's not easy to sit in front of a camera and do a podcast and do videos. I mean, that's like, yeah, that's hard for most
sweating
people,
right,
man.
Now. Maybe it's because these headphones.
But it's knees like weak too.
Yeah, but knees weak because I haven't been walking for the past 3 months. I've been walking to the desk and back. But yeah, I think the Instagram, people on Instagram, influencers in general, are known to be like very fake. And same with like even business people. They're known to like talk about stuff that they don't have. And I think,
it's facade, man. Like having gone through it, it was actually, just on a personal note, that was a real good thing for me to go through a time where a lot of people were following you and then a lot of people weren't following me. It really just wakes you up to how high your ego can get.
Yeah.
And, if you don't hit that point and it's just, you ride this high the whole way, it's hard to have like a low where you can kind of collect yourself and remain humble throughout the process. And that was what was important for my low, and what also may have been important for your low, is to have this high, have these videos, and then you hit this point where your channel is dying and you're like,
you want the feeling of,
yeah. And then you turned it around, you started adding more of you into it, and that's what really helped bring it back. You start putting your face in. People trust a face, not a video.
Even an ugly one.
Oh my God. You see, no, people trust an Asian face.
Thank God for Accutane.
Specifically. Yeah, it's just, you brought it back, and that's what's good about a low, and the fact you've been doing it for 10 years and you're only 20.
It's too long. Grew up on the internet 22. Kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. You've been following it a little while, but yeah, I think that's important for growth, and to kind of finalize your question. Yeah. It's adding that personality aspect, but also finding ways to remain humble throughout the process.
Cause you guys grew really fast on Fit Slow.
You know, it was a time in my life where like I'm just a local guy, and then all of a sudden I had all these followers. Yeah. And yeah, we grew quick. But the thing is, when you get addicted to that growth and you just want more and more and more of it.
Oh, for sure. Like, you don't know what the feeling is like. Like, for example, like, it's kind of like when they say, like, you win one Stanley Cup, you want to win another.
Yeah.
You want that feeling back again. And you want it just, it's almost like after you cross a certain milestone that you set for yourself, like, you might have like a quick high, but it's really, really short, like even hours. Like, I mean, I think when I hit 100,000 subscribers, obviously I was really happy about that. You get your silver play button. That silver play button's been sitting in the bin for a while now, a storage bin. But like, yeah, you kind of want to chase the next one. I think 200,000 subs was a big one because that was the recovery year. 160 was where I got stuck at in 20. But ever since then, like 300, 400, 500, we haven't even looked at it. And it's not because we're like ungrateful. It's just because we have a larger goal in mind. And after being on the industry for so long, it's like, we got to make this push right now. And yeah, I remember like Fitzflow, you guys did a lot of... you guys were like getting together every week and it was just a bunch of guys talking about fashion, and your Instagrams were all doing very well as well. You're one of the bigger ones in Victoria for fashion. And at that time I was like addicted to Yeezys, clothing and all that kind of stuff. You even dyed your hair blonde.
So did you.
But yeah, oh yeah, but yeah, we're not going to talk about that. I'll put a picture up on screen, but it was horrible. But there's also the tough part of the group aspect of like, of having multiple people to coordinate. How many was it? Was it four of you guys?
It was Matt, Steve, and I. Steve did most of the editing. That guy was extremely talented, man. He was in videography school.
Yeah.
But, it was like the demand cost to just be putting out videos weekly. It just should have been, you know, whenever we felt like it, because it wasn't, people didn't come to the videos because they were being uploaded every Wednesday. They came to the videos because it was us just sitting back and talking about something that a lot of people never really talked about. And to me, it wasn't really even fashion. Like, I follow it lightly nowadays, but maybe I just grew out of it. Who knows?
Yeah.
I still want to be fly, but with like more of your own flavor. But
same here. I've got rid of everything. I mean, I saw all your stuff on Facebook Marketplace a couple weeks ago.
offloaded.
Just liquidated. So and
It's funny. You move things around. You're like, holy, what? That was behind there?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, yeah, man, you just kind of minimalize and you want to just keep things simple. Like one jacket, one sweater, pair of jeans. Like, you don't want to go
overboard.
It just
doesn't really matter at some point. It's, I don't know, I just want something comfortable and low key, throw on a watch on it and you're good to go, kind of thing.
Right? That's it.
I just feel like clothes. I remember back then when I was in outfits and stuff, every time you leave the house, you're like, oh, like, how should I match this? Does this make my Yeezys look good? I was wearing like sweatpants with Yeezy 750s to class and I was like sitting in the back, like, what's the point of that? I mean, at this point, I don't really give a shit what I look like. Just throw some hoodies on, whatever's comfortable, and just be able to focus on what you're doing and not have to think about the outfits and this and that. Just like keep it chill.
Yeah.
But it does take a long time to realize. Like back then I remember like, yeah, every video would be like, oh, like I hated sitting in front of the camera. And now it's like, who even cares? Let's just let's just get this thing going and focus on the ideas and the content. But yeah, like the whole content thing, it's tiring to come up with new ideas. Like I know you guys had like, you guys cover, once you cover like all the general topics.
That's a good point. Actually, I wanted to ask you about that. Like having, I mean, you do tech, you're informative, but how do you come up with new ways to create the content that's in front of you? You can't keep the same template. Like you want to personalize it.
I think most of the ideas come from like, in bulks. Like you might just have one day where you're just like, you got your coffee right, you woke up on the right side of the bed, and and maybe you had a cold shower before because you're building for some reason, hot water thing keeps breaking, and you're just feeling it. Like there's some days where you're feeling like extra petty, and then there's others where you have extra like just like good ideas flowing around, and so you just write them down all in your notes and you'll see this and all the dots just get connected. And I know you've talked a lot about like how in your life, the whole podcast, real estate and everything, you're just bringing everything together. You've got all the tools and it's a great feeling to know that you have all the tools, but at the same time, it's just as easy to get carried away with the number of tools you have and have troubles executing and keeping consistent with that. You take a lot of the resources for granted. I remember like back in the day, we're filming on an iPod. Now we want to start a podcast we have all the best equipment right here, which is a great thing to have. But the whole idea thing is with tech, you have all these products that come out for you. Like the SEO is there already. You have the Samsungs, the iPhones and Android. And those are easy ones to pick off of in the tech space. You're in a product industry. The disadvantage is everybody's trying to cover that. I think what's unique about tech is when you go on these trips, you're considered like an influencer because you're on YouTube and Instagram and you're like a lifestyle creator. But at the end of the day, we're almost creating the same stuff as journalists as well, which is covering the event, testing out the products and informing consumers at the end of the day. Obviously some brands like Samsung have really shifted to lifestyle and travel as well and brought people on just to kind of integrated into their daily life. But at the end of the day, I think most trips that we go on are still considered like a technology journalist slash influencer, which is like the best of both worlds. You get the early access, but at the same time, you get hooked up with like nice hotel, nice flights, the best food. And it's like, you get a better experience than the journalists from what I've seen. It's they split us up into groups and stuff. But yeah, with ideas, we have the tech stuff. The hardest part is actually not coming up with new ideas. We can always think of a new desk setup, a new desk makeover, another lifestyle video. You can do a morning routine. You can do an everyday carry. You can shift to themes like the dark theme, light theme, student theme, budget theme. I've in the past really tried to stretch out series and try to make them a bit better each time. The home series is one where we did like, must have been like 10 videos, the desk setup stuff. I used to really push the lifestyle of clothing and shoes as well, but then I got a bit bored of clothes and shoes. And now I just want to do like more podcast episodes, talk about like the business side and behind the scenes of like trips, how they work, how to get brand deals. Because I just think it's more valuable that people can apply their lives. I know with like fashion, a lot of times people create channels that are, and like Instagram pages that are made so that other people can want what they have. But I think putting substance behind it and actually teaching stuff is equally as important and show that it's possible to reach that.
Well, that's what you brought up there on the last point was a lot of the reason why I felt compelled to get on the podcast with you is because there's a lot of having known you a little while when we sit down, I always leave there feeling like, holy, Justin knows a lot about the media side because you've been doing this a long time. You've put in your 10,000 hours, as they say.
How long is 10,000 hours? 10,000 hours, would that be how many hours?
Well, let's say there's definitely 10,000 hours in 10 years.
That's 5 years or so, right?
So however that is in scalability, let's say you put in 8 hours a day on your business, 5-6 days a week, sometimes more for the last 10 years. Like you've got a significant amount of hours accumulated. Yeah.
And I think for the first 5 years, what people don't know is that I wasn't making any money. I was losing money. Every cent just went back. And even nowadays, we spend more money on reinvesting into the companies than a lot of people do. I know it's like, you don't need to, but
I invest with his equipment. I mean, I don't really think most you'd need a red. It's a standard, but it's that creative side, man.
The credit card bill in January was not pretty. I think it's like, the whole 10,000 hours thing. It's true that the first 5 years of YouTube, I had the advantage that I had was that I started young. So I was living in my parents' house. I never had to pay for food, but at the same time, my parents didn't buy me anything. I didn't have a phone I was like one of the last people to have a phone in my class, which is funny. I didn't have texting until grade 11. It was just a speed dial phone that had three contacts. The 10,000 hours thing, it was just every single day. As a student, after school, I'd film a video. My parents made me learn piano and Chinese, so I had to sit down.
Did you enjoy it?
No, I hated it. But it did make me value time, and I think it might have helped like brain development, memorization.
Put me in piano for the same reason.
Yeah, I had to practice an hour a day.
Going around that every mother read.
Oh yeah. Well, my mom's a piano teacher, so she would sit there and watch me practice for an hour a day. And then as soon as I would be done, I would run upstairs and start filming some videos, but I was making jack shit. I was making a penny a month for a little bit. And
did your parents want you to do a YouTube channel?
No, they did. They made me use an alternate name. I used to call myself Jeremy online. I didn't show my face either. But eventually it took a lot of years to convince them that it was like a realistic business. And now they understand it quite a bit. My dad supports it, but he doesn't understand it as much, a little bit older, but my mom kind of sort of knows how it works now. A lot of times people see what you have today, because as you get larger, it's easier for new people to find you and they assume that you've always had what you had and they'll say, oh, your parents bought it for you, which I mean is a valid claim because if you look at me, I'm like 20, 22. Between that age and a lot of
people. Drive a nice car, have your own condo. I get it. And I remember when you bought your condo. It's your parents, and I know this, but I want to ask it for the people that are listening. Did your parents support you all the way through this?
They did. They did want me to go to school. They forced me to go to university out of.
They did, yeah. While you had it, how much were you making?
We'll talk about that in the next episode on its own because it's its own discussion. But I think the bottom line is that that it doesn't really come easy. And if you're someone like me who was not really naturally made to be on content, I used to be terrible at public speaking. I hate being in front of the camera. I'm still working on it and trying to be better at it. But if you find your strengths, which in my case was the business side and also just having an eye for content a little bit, even if it wasn't the best in the industry, if you just continue pushing at it, eventually it'll pay off. And obviously people can say now we're getting overpaid a lot for campaigns. Like some of these campaigns are the amount that an average person would make an entire year just off of one or two videos. But it definitely did take its share of work. And if you're starting in your 20s especially, it's going to be a big grind in terms of balancing your time and committing the time that you would otherwise use to like hang out with friends, go out, enjoy life. The side hustle will take up all of that time, but hopefully it'll be worth it one day. So I think that's like kind of an intro for the first episode about like the direction of media, where I came from. And I know we're trying to work on my tangents and jumping around on topics, but if you guys have any suggestions,
episode one.
If you guys have any suggestions, just drop them down below and what we can improve. I hope we have the whole technical side down and everything looks good. But thank you guys so much for listening to the first episode. And in the next episode, we're going to talk about university, my experience with that, and how to make the decision as to whether you should drop out, and just kind of my story in that aspect.